This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by National Partnership. Inner Ho
Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising,
the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho whose pronouns are she and her, living in New York City.
And Akua, now known as the bald one. Pronouns she and her, doing some of the same things as Sam.
That was my favorite one in 2015 so far, because the backstory is very funny.
2015, Samantha.
Whoa.
You out here.
That's crazy.
You and I had my
coffee already. I don't know. I'm sorry, guys. I don't have it.
I don't got it on me.
2019. We have two types of episodes on this here show. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host of this show, and one of my rotating co-hosts, talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, all the hosts come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is an interview episode.
Yes.
It is the last episode of our Ability April series, which, good fucking job, Akua. You did it again.
Thank you.
You did it again. 3 for 3.
Ooh, I don't know what May gonna look like, but y'all hold on tight.
I don't remember what May is. Oh, it's maternal May?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. May is looking good too. Regardless, shout the fuck out. So good. Yeah, so this is the last episode of our Ability April series, in which we talk to folks with chronic conditions about their sex, love, and dating lives, specifically black folks with chronic conditions. And on this episode, we have Jade T. Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And she's here to talk to us about black, queer, disabled kink.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very good episode. Very good. I've learned some things.
Reaffirmed some things.
Exactly. Exactly. But before we get into that, we have a couple of short segments. They are...
Bay of the Week.
Where we talk about people who we find attractive.
And Ho of the Week.
Where we shout out you guys, the homies, the listeners, and the freaking fans.
And if you guys would like to follow along with this conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it, and hashtag PodIn so other people can see it.
And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please, to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. If you're having a back to school event,
we the ones.
Exactly. It makes sense. You know, we talk about sex.
Consent.
That's for consent. That's pretty important. We do live shows that are fun.
You know, we pray do self-care.
Yes, we do sex trivia. That's also fun and academic.
You two birds.
Exactly.
Hey,
sounds like something I would want to do when I was in school. So just putting that out there.
Plug that in there.
Exactly. Now we're going to get into Bay of the Week.
Yes. And I actually have a Bay of the Week
because
I was perusing on the Instagram.
Perusing.
And
galvanize this episode. And I was like, damn, this bitch is smart.
Word.
Exactly.
Sometimes I be having them. Sometimes I don't. So I was on Instagram. I got, I think their page was shared by someone's story, because all I do is watch stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be all the people's business. So I was like, oh, this look good. Let me go figure out who this is. My bae of the week is at The Body Hunter on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
T-H-E period. B-O-D-Y period. H-U-N-T-E.
Oh, The Dot Body Dot Hunter.
Yes.
Gotcha.
I'm
okay,
sorry.
Cool.
Sorry.
No problem. And I see them in their sucking toes. Nice.
Whew. So let's talk about how that video in itself took me back to a time when I got turned out. But as you can see, why this is my bae of the week. They are I want to call them an erotic performer. I want to call them a stud stripper. I want to call them... I need more synonyms. I need to express.
I liked all those so far, though.
Yeah, so they are a stud person.
Masculine presenting.
Oh, masculine. Okay. I feel like they called themselves a stud in a video before.
Okay.
That's where I'm getting that language from. I'm not putting that on them.
Gotcha.
But just in case, because I'm making shit up.
They got a nice ass.
Yeah. So they are a masculine presenting person who is a erotic performer that comes with big strap energy. Like, it exudes through their Instagram, and I have to go see them perform.
Yeah.
And
before we started recording, me and Sam were talking about like masculine strippers versus like femme strippers and like the differences. Mm-hmm. And how we perceive them or how they're presented, and what we like and don't like about them. And what I don't like about masculine strippers or erotic performers is the aggression. Like, yes. It's too much. It feels unsafe. I don't like it when it comes from cishet men.
Yes.
But when it comes, you know, from queer presenting people, I'm all right with it. And I don't know. I feel like something wrong there. Something right, but something also wrong there. So I can't put my finger on it. But they fine as fuck.
They are.
They have this big strap energy that is just like,
yes.
All right. Like, okay. They are almost always nude on their Instagram, which is just like,
I've seen a lot of ass and titties and I'm not mad at it.
Just angles. Yes. Just you fine. They're fine as fuck.
Yeah.
And I have to go see them perform now.
And I like their waves too.
Yes. I have to get a feel for this in person.
I have to get a feel for this.
Cool, gonna feel this nigga up.
But. No. And that's the thing. Like, I think this is my voyeurism coming out. Cause I like to spectate, but when they're like,
in your face.
Or when they're like, when they're dancing on someone, or like they be putting people in positions and things. Mm-hmm. That couldn't be me. Like, we not about to do this on this floor right here.
And then you get turned out.
You know? But I do want to go and see it. I want to visually experience it.
I'm down.
And see if I still have the same vibes that I get when I watch cishet performers. Because I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I just
No shade to anybody who does. I don't like it either, though. It just feels too aggressive.
Yeah, it's so much.
I like the, I guess I like the sensuality and the coyness that kind of comes with feminine strippers. Okay. You know, like it's kind of like a tease in a game as opposed to a get the fuck up in here. Let me put my dick in your motherfucking face.
Like I was we were in a Her Uprising was invited to a movie premiere.
Yes.
That centered male erotic performers.
Shout out to Jean Graham, the director of For the Ladies, which is a movie, a documentary about male strippers and the women who love them.
Yes.
Yes.
And the impact that they have on their very people of color community.
Yes.
It was very black centered. It was very community centered.
Theatrical release June 7th. So look out for that.
Yes. So we were invited to a screening of that. That was last year. Whew.
Time is just flying by. I thought it was 2015, 2 seconds ago. So fuck the Rhino.
And watching the movie, spoiler, there was a scene where one of the performers was taking a bath. That was their performance.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it. I didn't like any of it. I was like, why is this man washing up in the middle of the floor? What am I supposed to find sexy about this?
Damn.
And that just, I don't. And there was, at the end of the premiere, there was a live performance. Mm-hmm. Some of them performers came out and there was a stud performer. Mm-hmm. And I was just here for that. Like, here again. I was like, ooh, please don't come to me. Don't. Because also one of the performers tried to talk to me.
Yeah.
I was out with my friend.
Yeah.
And I was like, and he like was like looking through the crowd. And I was like, sir, please. Please,
please leave me alone.
So I didn't want like that attention on me, but the other performer could have came. They could have came. Mm. They could have did a little twirl.
Interesting. All right. We got to go see The Body Hunter. I got to start my spring 2019 bucket list.
Oh, my God. I'm waiting for it.
Yeah.
I only do things with Samantha tells me to. So my life be bored sometimes. I'll be waiting for Samantha.
All right. Ooh. I'm with the shits.
But yeah, that is Bay of the Week.
Thank you go for check sharing them out. That person. Yeah. I'm going to follow them. In their ass pictures.
In their ass.
That's the only reason why I'm coming, actually.
To see the ass in person.
Yes, exactly.
It's a nice ass. It's a nice ass. Link.
All right, who is our hoe of the week this week?
Our hoe of the week is our Patreon, Two Birds, One Stone. Mm-hmm. They became a patron. I don't know when, but we missed them last time. I don't know where I've been.
I'm so sorry about that.
Shout outs to you for giving us your money.
Yes.
We appreciate all of y'all. also, everyone that pays us.
Shout out to the people who came to this past sex trivia. That was a fun ass time.
It was. Shout out to Brittany, who came from Jersey.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, because I'm not driving.
I thought that she came from Boston.
Crystal, yes.
Yes, with Bay.
They had moved from, no, they moved from Boston. They're now based in New York.
Oh, my bad. Sorry, Crystal. Girl, I'm sorry.
But I do owe Crystal.
I'm 3 years behind on everything, so.
I do owe Crystal some mental health resources. But I got you. I didn't forget. I kind of did, but I remember that.
Cool. All right, yeah. Shout out to them. Yeah. The usual squad was there. Shout out to Dash, who wins everything every single time that he comes. I don't know.
And our first place winners, Tater Thotties.
Yes. Tater formerly Thotties. Known as the Three Homigos, I think. Yes. Yes, they're great. They're so cute and nice. And then that, I forgot what his name is, but he said that I had evil eyes in the DM, and I don't know why he said that. Cujo.
Oh.
Yeah. He said I had a radiant smile but evil eyes.
But he liked it. So take it as a compliment. Okay. Finally seeing that in a core. It's, you can't keep it hidden, Samantha. People, it's coming up.
I'm sorry, y'all. Well, that's it for the little segments. Oh, yes. Speaking of sex trivia, I also hosted Family Feud. That was so fun.
Oh.
Yeah. I should be a game show host. I'm quitting Inner Hoe Uprising to be a game show host. Yes. Yeah, so May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, if you don't have any plans, you should come through to Sex Trivia Sundays, hosted by Inner Hoe Uprising. We have sex experts who, after every question, they let you know the real tea behind what's going on. It's very informative. We have great music that's usually played by Rodeca, but this week, this past time, Rob did it.
And it was lit.
Yeah, it was lit. Different kind of lit. Less is a more Jadakiss. I don't know. That's me just stereotyping both of their
Yes, the both of their musical interests. Jadakiss, bitch.
Rob said that they loved Jadakiss that night. So,
really?
Yes.
Okay.
We were in the Uber home and they said, love Jadakiss. And I was like,
I would have never thunk. I was like,
duly noted. Because when I'm getting in that ass to roast you,
Jadakiss.
I'm going to do the Jadakiss laugh afterwards because I already roast Rodeca about SZA. So what the fuck is up?
That is
my love language. But yeah, that was fun. Yeah, there's like drink specials. And then also, since it's on Sunday now, and since Game of Thrones is airing for the next couple of weeks, we watch Game of Thrones afterwards.
Yes.
And that was super fun, too.
And the drink specials for Game of Thrones was lit. Like, Whale of Love Story Bar was setting them shits on fire.
Yeah, I think that was the Targaryen one.
Yeah, and there was a blue one. I don't know.
That was probably like Winterfell. So, yeah, Akua calls it Games of Thrones.
Stop that, Samantha. You are not going to perpetrate that on me.
But you know who does call it Games of Thrones? Queen. And she actually watches.
Oh, okay.
Black people just put S's on the end of things.
Yo, we don't care. That's how we talk. It's our black scent. That's how we talk. I needed letters.
Oh, I love it. But yeah, that's super fun. So come through. Yeah, it's a good time.
Yes. We have sexperts. We have great prizes. Questions by Sam. We have prizes.
Yeah.
And maybe some extra things this upcoming 5th. Yes. So you gotta be there to find out.
You gotta be there. And I feel like this is gonna finally be the first warm one.
Oh,
yes. Like May is actually exactly ass cheeks out. Ass cheeks the fuck out. Then 6 days later, we got the third motherfucking annual Pod in Live NYC, my nigga.
Yes.
And I think this is going to be the first one that we're all at. Because Rodeca's gonna be back in time. We think.
I was working in my chair.
We think, yes. Rodeca is away in Florida right now for training. So she's not going to be on the next episode, which is our group episode. But yeah, we're going to be there. All of our podcast friends are going to be there. It's hosted by Tea with Queen and Jay annually every year. And it's a space for black podcasters to kiki with each other. So if you're a podcaster, come the fuck through. If you're a podcast listener, come the fuck through. If you want to get into podcasting, come the fuck through. If you just like having fun with black people in a nice space.
Melissa, if you want a good old black ass time that is safe and friendly and inviting and community centered
and free.
And free. Forgot about that. Yeah. And free. Bring your ass.
Come the fuck through. And then music by Fifi Girl Wonder.
Oh, it's about to be lit. Yeah. Yo, Fifi exactly. Be having us turn.
She does.
It's be a mood.
She does. One of my favorite DJs in New York City. So it's going to be a good ass time. To attend, you do have to RSVP. Mm-hmm. So you can find the link to do so in the description of this episode. And we'll see you there.
Also in the bio of our Instagram. The bio of T with Queen and Jay's Instagram.
Yes. Bio of Bag Lady's Instagram.
Who? Queer?
Yeah. All our friends are going to be. Diamond is going to be there for Marsha's plate.
I'm excited.
It's good. Yeah, it's very good. Pay a hoe. If you love, love, love this show and appreciate the hard work that we do to bring it to you every week, we would so greatly appreciate it if you supported us monetarily and non-monetarily. To support us monetarily, we ask you to visit innerhouseuprising.com and choose the Pay a Hoe Once or Pay a Hoe Monthly options. Pay a Hoe Once redirects you to our PayPal, where you can drop off any one-time donation at any amount that you want as many times as you want. So that takes you to paypal.me/innerhoe. It's kind of like we're fuck buddies and we just call each other up when we want to satisfy that itch. If you choose the Pay a Hoe Monthly option, you'll be redirected to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouseuprising. On Patreon, you'll be given the option of setting a monthly recurring donation at any price that you want. And we'll return the favor with some monthly goodies, like we're in a committed relationship and we have some expectations for one another. So if you donate $2 or more a month, you get early and discounted access to Inner Ho Uprising events. And if you donate $5 or more a month, you get, fuck that, a regular Inner Ho Uprising newsletter curated by yours truly. It's fun, it's insightful, it's filled with offbeat stories about sex, love, and dating that you may have missed in the current drudgery of the news cycle. If you're strapped for cash or don't wish to support us monetarily, then there are other ways to help us out. You can leave an Apple Podcast review or a Stitcher review. You can comment on one of our episodes on SoundCloud or CastBox or Himalaya. You can tweet about us and tag us on Twitter or Instagram. You can reply to Twitter threads asking what your favorite podcasts are with our @. You can drop a link to your favorite Inner Ho Uprising episode in your group chat. You can tell your work best friend to give us a listen. Or you can walk down the street rocking some Inner Ho Uprising merchandise, which you can find on innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. Now, let's get into this motherfucking show. Yeah, that topic of the day. What? When have I ever said that? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, that topic of the day. What is it, Sam?
It's called Fuck It, my nigga. Let's get into it.
Oh, and today we are talking with Jade T. Perry. Jade, pronouns she, her, hers, is a almost 30-year-old Chicago-based integrative artist, tarot card slinger, play-based educator and facilitator, chronically ill and disabled femme babe, and, on top of many hats and identities, the co-founder of the Mystic Soul Project, which centers people of color and our indigenous, ever-evolving, synchronetic spiritual technology.
I love it.
The mission of her work as a whole is to contribute resources, art, narratives, and experiential learning opportunities that aid in the holistic healing processes of people of color, queer people of color, and disabled or chronically ill people of color. Her written work and speaking topics have included topics such as spirituality, race, ethnicity, sexuality, culture, identity, and more to counter cultural narratives that will empower readers to thrive and to lovingly and creatively challenge secular and sacred systems toward greater levels of inclusion.
Welcome, Jade.
Welcome, Jade.
What a bio.
Hello.
We are so excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you. Actually, I was so, for lack of a better word, excited. When you responded, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good one. Let's get into
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And so many of my friends listen to your podcast, and so they're going to be super hyped when this comes out.
Yay. Shout out to the friends. Hey, homies.
Okay. Now, for our listeners and for you, because I don't know if I had like wrote this in the intro email, but this interview was sparked by your article on Black Youth Project, Chills Down My Spinal Degeneration, Why We Need Black Queer Disabled Kink. And yes, I read that, yes, and I was like, I have never heard of the term. And you put it as a term, as one whole thing, Black Queer Disabled Kink. And I was like, we have to unpack this as part of our series. And then I saved it on my Facebook, and then Samantha sent it to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I already clocked this, but now we really have to go full force.
Because
I saw it on Facebook. I was like, let's save this for a moment where we can digest it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Samantha sent it, and I was like, oh, I have to read this. And I was like, oh, I have to get to type in.
It was fated.
Yes. I'm so excited. So shall we get into it?
Yes.
So one thing I've noticed is that you're quite private in your writings. You're both personal but private.
Yes.
Or galvanizing yes. but private. So our first question is, what is your relationship to disability and chronic illnesses? What are your disabilities or chronic illnesses?
I'm actually really glad that we're starting with this question, because I think it gives a moment of thoughtfulness for all of us. And so one of the things, I'm definitely, I identify politically as disabled. I identify politically as a disabled femme. And at the same time, I'm a person in the world. And I need to have insurance, and I need to have jobs not discriminate against me. And so while I'm very firmly rooted in my identity as a disabled femme, I tend to leave out the details to get to the truth, right? So the truth is, access really is something that everyone can be striving for. That if the truth is that this community has so many wisdoms and gems to share, sometimes, especially in writing, I can leave out some of the details, right, so that folks can focus on what are those truths. But since we're in conversation, it's a little bit different. And so I have a few things in terms of both body and mind, or body mind all together, because it's really one system. So I have spinal degeneration, so it's degenerative disc disease is the billable name. The name that's billable is degenerative disc disease. And that is where bones in your spine kind of wear away. So they pinch the nerves, and they kind of curve your spinal structure. And so it can create curvatures in your spine and kind of squishing of all that material that's between the discs. And so it can be quite painful on its worst days. I also have chronic plantar fasciitis. I've had that since I was 19. I have IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, which is a real thing. A lot of people are like, wait, that's a real thing? It is. Basically, my gastrointestinal tract is like, fuck you, fuck time, fuck everybody, fuck everything. Let's see. And I have PTSD, and I have a few other things that I won't share in this way, but I'm happy to talk offline about that.
Thank you for sharing those with us. Would you mind giving us some symptoms of each of the illnesses that you've noted?
I think it helps to add some context to what this looks like in the everyday. And so in the everyday, I look like an able-bodied person. And so I'm very aware that I have that passing privilege, right? At home, however, and even sometimes as I'm out and about, there's things that come along with these disabilities or chronic illnesses, like inflammation. Sometimes I need to walk with a cane. Sometimes I'll need to use a wheelchair. And it really all depends. What people don't understand about chronic illness is that chronic illness is a matrix of different inputs, different systems that contribute to that illness. And so you're navigating. It's almost like if you know a soundboard, right? If sometimes it may be about to rain outside, and so you've already got the atmospheric pressure kind of up. So on my end, I have to make sure, okay, got to do something for inflammation, got to put on my heating pad, got to make sure I'm wearing my back brace, got to make sure. And so all of those different inputs affect how chronic illness shows up. A lot of people think that it's static or it's always just this, and that's just not the case because our bodies are, we're living organisms, so we're affected by all these different things. Now, people see disability as more static, which is true in some cases, but not true in other cases. And so I could go on and on and on and on about chronic illness and disability and the nuances between those things. But it's really like, it's like many other communities. Some things we have language for and some things we're just making up language for because it doesn't exist as of yet.
Can you give an example of that?
Mia Mingus, I don't know if you know her, but Mia Mingus is an amazing, amazing disability justice activist and writer. And Mia Mingus coined the term access intimacy, right? So a lot of people think about accessibility. Accessibility is like the structure, right? So are there ramps and are there these things? And a lot of times people see accessibility as just, okay, let's just check this, check these boxes off. Do we have this? Do we have that? Yes, no, okay, cool. But what access intimacy is more of a symbiotic relationship with each other, living in community with each other, understanding that we can make ways and make the world more accessible for each other. So, for example, I think about the way, particularly, sometimes Black people do access intimacy without really knowing that this is what we're doing. But to give an example, kind of rooted in my own cultural background, everybody knows that when there's a family event, we need to figure out, okay, who's going to pick up grandma? Who's dropping grandma back off? Who's making sure grandma gets a plate? Who's making sure that grandma has taken her medicine before the plate comes? And so that's doing access intimacy. Now, why we can't figure out, and when I say we, I mean the collective, we, not Black people specifically, why we can't figure out how to do that, how to scale that up, systems and structures, right? but we do this. It's something that we all can do. You don't have to know a lot about. And I love that about Mia Mingus's work is that they really illuminate that you don't have to know everything that there is to know about accessibility to partake in access intimacy. So while that is not my direct work or my direct words, that is an example of how people are creating language for new things.
Thank you for that. That was so educational.
Yeah.
I've learned something.
I like when it shows up, like we talk about things like feminism and things like that and like movements that people feel like are new. And it's always good to have reminders that like we've always been doing this work just as like a group of people who love each other and give a shit about the other person. Like,
And want to make sure grandma can come to the event.
Exactly. Because it's not fun without grandma.
It is the fact that, you know, not wanting to exclude this person because they mean something to the event. You acknowledge their participation in the event as something needed. Mm-hmm. And that's right, that everyone's participation should be acknowledged as needed in a space.
And in society.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder why it is that we, the collective, get our shit together. I think it has something to do with capitalism or.
Oh, yeah. You know, now, that don't get me started. That's another podcast. Y'all will have to invite me back just to go on a capitalism rant.
I mean, it happens every episode.
It's relevant.
It's relevant to everything. Yeah. Every episode is like a fuck capitalism affirmation.
I am saying ashe to that.
So to segue into what it's like dating as a person with a quote unquote invisible chronic illness, and those are your words, not my label for you, but words that you have written. What has been your dating experience as a Black queer woman with chronic illnesses, or as a Black queer disabled passing woman with chronic illnesses?
Labels. Yeah. It's crazy because sometimes I can pass and sometimes I can't. And so that's its own. It's very complicated. It's like socioculturally I am, but in reality, I'm not. I'm still disabled. I'm still feeling the pain. I'm just not necessarily, the systems and structures don't allow me to be free enough sometimes to be like, I'm actively in pain. And so I'm not doing the emotional labor of, you know, smiling at you and making you feel great and precious as you, you know, fuck up my coffee order. Right. So,
yeah.
So I'm never really fully passing, and I don't, and that's not my goal in any way, shape, form, or fashion. I'm talking about the way people see me, which is different than, you know, how I see myself in reality. But you didn't ask about that. You asked about dating. So
I still appreciated that answer.
And it leads into your experience, because your experience will be different when you are able to pass and when you aren't, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. So you've got folks that actually like will fetishize disability, which gets real problematic.
Weird. We had touched on that during our last episode. We had an inter-abled couple, where the man in the relationship is a C5 quadriplegic, and his girlfriend, and we didn't even know that that was a thing. I'm not surprised that it's a thing, because everything is fucked up in society, but like, it just wasn't something that was even on my brain. And he like brought up the fact that like people were like stealing their videos from YouTube and uploading it to Pornhub, and like not sexual videos in any way, just like exist, like I'm out here
talking,
doing my thing.
No, it gets really weird and really problematic. And and for me, you know, I'm a Black woman, I'm a Black femme. Mm-hmm. And so there's layers and layers to this.
Yeah, you're already fetishized.
You see what I'm saying? And so it can get really weird. And then on another, you can also be asexualized, which is fine because there are people who have those identities, right? And so I'm not talking about that as an identity. I'm talking about people literally just feeling like, oh, you are automatically not a sexual, not interested in sex, not interested in sexuality, because look at you, you know, you're in a wheelchair. And so it gets really weird. People ask very strange questions about how things work and how, you know, how do you have sex and this and that. Now, if you're my people, right, and on this podcast I'm gonna say y'all are my people, we can have that conversation. But if you're a stranger on the street, we're not having that conversation.
Yeah, because at what instance are you gonna ever ask somebody that question?
When do you walk up to someone you perceive able-bodied and say, what you got in your pants? Well, how y'all fucking?
Exactly.
But I'm telling you, the audacity of people, even in 2019, it's crazy. And so, so those things you have to really wade through, and you have to have a really firm understanding of who you are and your identities. And for me, have a strong understanding of like social cultural dynamics, so that you don't internalize all of that noise. And so for me, when I'm thinking about dating someone, first of all, I just watch, because it's inevitable that I'm going to have a flare. It's inevitable that I'm going to cancel, because my body was like, no, we're not into that today. Right. Those things are inevitable. And so you'll learn a lot by just watching how people move, watching how they, you know, watching their energy around you. And so that's, I think for me, I watch people. I like to know, like, okay, how is this person moving? If it's someone I don't know as well, there's little cues. So I can understand from my experience as as a Black woman, let's just say, navigating a professional workplace. If you go to an interview, there's things that you're looking for. You're like, let me see who's on this board. Let me see who's like doing this and doing that. And so it's a similar process for me when I'm thinking about dating. you can look at the IG and be like, okay, let's see what kind of things are going on, especially with like movement people. If you're a movement person and you're making events and you're doing all these things, but you don't have any accessibility info, that to me is, as my grandmom says, signal one is signal 100. And so those are the things, those are the kind of cues that I don't think people, nobody teaches you to look for those things, but in order to continue to understand the world around you, it helps sometimes to look into that. At one point, I didn't need like the daily use of an assistive walking device, and now I do. So even that changes what dating has looked like for me through the years and even through the months. And I remember when I met my partner, we started off as friends and, you know, flirting and this and that. So they already knew that I had some chronic illnesses, some disability, but they were like, I wasn't going to ask you. I didn't know if we had that kind of friendship at that point. But as it started to get, you know, real sexy, real sensual, real, real something else. I think I explicitly asked, like, have you ever dated someone with chronic illnesses? Have you ever, you know, and talking about the body a lot. I'm a Taurus, so I'm a really body person anyway. And so I talk about the body and I like to write about the body. And so these are things that I do anyway. So if when someone's approaching me, usually, typically, they know that. Or if we've started as friends, typically, they know that. But sometimes you could just tell. You could just tell from a glance, the way somebody looks at you as you're walking with their assistive walking device, that it's like, I don't even really want to be their friend, let alone date them. And so there's those little nuances that you it's almost, it's like another sense almost.
This week's Inner Hoe Uprising is sponsored by National Partnership. Men in power are working overtime to control our bodies, our lives, and our futures. Abortion access, freedom from sexual violence, and economic security are key to building a world where all women can thrive. The National Alliance to End Sexual Violence and the National Partnership for Women and Families are standing together to take our power back. Learn more at nationalpartnership.org/standtogether.
All right, now we're going to get back into the show. I wanted to go back to, because you had mentioned having a flare, just for people who might not know what that means.
A flare, it kind of is what it sounds like. So a flare is literally when anything that you already have is exacerbated by some kind of input. So by, I don't know, the weather, the fact that your shower was too long that morning, you slept wrong, somebody smoking in the apartment, you know, next door, whatever your thing is, a flare is when those things, something environmentally or even biologically makes those things exacerbated.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. One thing that we're kind of like, you're helping us grow in this podcast, but one thing that I'm realizing, like every time we do these series with different people at different intersections, is just like it reminds me of our trans series where Diamond was like, okay, now I have to like, Diamond is the host of Marsha's Plate, and she's a Black trans woman. And she had done an episode about what it's like dating as a Black trans woman, what's like finding romantic love as a Black trans woman, and kind of just like having all of these things that you consistently have to think about as you're navigating the dating space. And it reminds me of like when Rebecca chimed in, Rebecca's another one of our co-hosts, towards the end of the episode. And she was like, yeah, it's just like that for me dating as like a fat Black woman. So there's all these different like, just when we have identities, we just have to like peep the game.
Yeah,
you do. No, you
we just
do.
Gotta check shit
you
at
really
the front door.
You do. We don't have time to be playing games,
right? Because it's like one life to live, depending on what you believe in. But yeah. And the shit ain't that long though.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You mentioned the progression of your current relationship, and kind of your partner's comfortability, like disclosing, asking about your illnesses. Do you find that your relationships progress more quickly because of your chronic chronic illnesses, or having to disclose them and kind of creating this new intimacy around that?
That's a good question. Not necessarily. Not for me, because I'm very forthright. I'm very forthright. So if I just, you know, if I want to, you know, at the beginning, it wasn't like, we're going to be in this kind of relationship. It was like, here's the thing. I'm out here. You cute. I like you. You know, you like me. Also, I'm out here pee popping on a handstand.
You know, that's what I'd be trying to tell them, Jade, but they're not listening to me. They don't believe me when I tell them.
So let me be clear about that. Right. So I think for me, I've learned how to maintain my boundaries, because it is my right to have boundaries, and it is my right to understand that relationships can move as quickly or as slowly as I want them to. And it is my right to understand that, you know, being chronically ill or being disabled, yes, can change timelines based on what your body does, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to change the type of relationship that you're in. Because again, if we're going back to the framework of, you know, me and Mingus's access intimacy, that can happen with a one night stand, right? And so it's all about being present, understanding that, okay, if you just brought me up three flights of steps and, you know, you're trying to hit, I don't expect me to be riding and diving and twirling and popping and
right,
all of those
all these things.
Or expect that in another way, right? Expect that with a foam block so I can get my hips up. Expect that with using a resistance band to hold my hips up. You know, expect that with, and that's access. That's what it's about. And so you don't necessarily have to be in a relationship to practice that. And even in my relationship now, it's something that we're still learning and growing with. And some days we're good at it and some days we're not. My partner also has chronic illnesses too. So again, it's not just a one-way thing. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And a lot of people that I've talked to may have a body, I'm just going to call it a body reality, right? But they don't see it as a chronic illness. They don't see it. They don't see themselves politically as disabled. And so I think it really depends on where people are coming into the conversation.
Can you give an example of that? Maybe like arthritis or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So you have chronic pain, right? You understand that this pain can be exacerbated by outside symptoms. It's billable, right? They write it down as arthritis. And when you go to the doctor, you can get a bill for whatever it is that they're treating you for. But they don't see themselves as, okay, I'm chronically ill, or I'm someone with chronic pain, or, you know, they don't maybe see themselves in that. So I have a lot of those conversations too. And really, I think it's so personal how people identify it with gender and even with ability. It's so personal. And so I know I have folks that have, you know, general anxiety disorder, but they don't necessarily see themselves as chronically ill. And then I have friends who have general anxiety disorder and they're like, no, I'm chronically ill. This is chronic. It happens over time. And this is something that I receive care for. I have a care team for, which is not like something to be ashamed of. That's a reality. So that's what I mean by that.
Well, I want to counter that, because that reminded me of Money from Queer Walk. And in an episode, she was discussing how certain mental illnesses like depression and anxiety have been reframed or made to seem as chronic when they used to be episodic, you know, when they used to be episodes, but because of Big Pharma, they are now being treated and being toited as these chronic things.
Yeah.
So that brought me back to that. But I love that concept of body reality and how people identify for themselves.
Yeah. But see, the thing is, that is also true. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily an either or.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are just true. And that's a part of what it means to navigate the medical industrial complex, right? It's yes, it's how we identify, but it's also like what codes are the insurance companies getting about what my body is doing? And it's also about what does big pharma think about what my body is doing and how do they capitalize on it? It really is, if you think really deeply about it, it really kind of is like a clusterfuck. But at the same time, I think we've made such beautiful community interpersonally. So that to me is the invaluable part. And in all of these different spaces of the community, everybody speaks to what it is that they speak to. So someone speaking to big pharma essentially coding things as chronic that may be episodic, that's still a part of the disability justice conversation. And so there's room for all, if you think about like a newspaper, there's room for all these different beats. And so I think that's the beauty of it. But I always trust when someone is telling me whether or not they're chronically ill, I just trust their word. And so their word is their word, you know?
Their identity is their identity. We're not gonna fight with them.
Exactly. Well, and also because even getting a diagnosis costs money.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, you know what I mean? You have to have some kind of insurance to get a diagnosis. And so some people may have chronic illnesses that don't have a diagnosis, and they may or may not identify as chronically ill. So it gets really intricate. And these are the conversations that we're having within the community. There's so many different, and that's the thing that I kind of love about it, that there's so many and another things.
Yeah.
So I love that we get to do that here too, you know? There's a lot of and another things. And so honoring all of that is important.
So as a person who identifies as a spoonie.
Hey.
And I'm talking of you. That's not me. could you briefly explain what that is, and how you negotiate your spoons to make room for dating?
Really, it's how does dating negotiate itself to accommodate my spoons?
Okay. All right.
Say it.
So spoon theory is a framework made by Christine Mizarandino on butyoudon'tlooksick.com. And it came out as this kind of really cool, like, community theory around energy, units of energy being visualized as spoons. And I believe that the author was doing this with a friend. She was trying to explain how her body worked to a friend. And so I think the story goes that they take out these spoons and they say, okay, imagine these spoons as units of energy. And so in the morning, you may get 10 spoons and you decide through the day what you spend those spoons on. Or you may get 2 spoons this morning because you didn't sleep well last night and I don't know, it was raining. So, you know, whatever your thing is, whatever the environmental symptoms are. And so you have to decide, how do you use those spoons? How do you use your units of energy for the day? Some people like the battery analogy better than the spoon analogy. So, or the like gas tank. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of say the same thing. And so negotiating spoons, I mean, it's something that you have to do in your everyday life, really. I think the way that it comes up in my dating life the most would be around outings, deciding on outings. Because if we're in an inter-abled dating or sensual kiki time, and we both want to, we know we want to go out, we know we want to be on an outing together, I have to decide what am I going to do earlier on in that day to set myself up for success. And also, my expectation is that someone with non-disabled privilege is also looking at ways that they can help save on the spoons. So don't get me to the club and we got to wait in the line. You should have called. You should have called in advance.
Mm-hmm, right.
And also, I'm going home. And so those are the kinds of things, right? And the people that I'm at a point in my life, I'm like hardcore. I'll be 30 in a few days, and so
happy almost birthday.
I don't know. Thank you. I don't know what shifted between years 27 to 30. I know Saturn return was kind of in there too. But I am not at a place where I'm willing to be in intimate space, and that could be dating or just literally sensual kicking or just friendship, with folks that don't have that forethought. Why? Because if you can do it for grandma, you could do it for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Me and Akua have this conversation all the time.
Like,
it's something about that,
you know,
27.
I mean?
We are quickly approaching 27 in a couple of months.
And we just like, nah.
Akua, yeah, this is just dwindling.
All of that.
It's slow for you motherfuckers out here.
But that actually.
And it only gets more real.
Yeah.
It sounds like it. But that actually leads me into my next question. I'm going to quote you from your article, Dating with Chronic Illnesses, Healing Conversation with Sister Friends. In my life, it's important for bays and potential bays to have language, to know that through my daily activity, I'm negotiating energy through the lens of whatever physical limitations I have, aka spoons. So when I say I have about 4 spoons left, I need bay to have done that research and have a reference point for that. End quote. So how much, now that we're approaching 30, how much educating are we doing in our relationships, if any, you know, and our potential partners? I don't know if you're polyamorous because you're currently in a relationship, or potential partners in the past. Were they required to come equipped with this knowledge and this language?
My relationship structure right now is we free. We just, you know, we just figuring
y'all are out here living. Okay.
Yes.
You know, we just figuring it out. You know, interpret that as you will. We just out here living, being cute, being snacks.
Yes.
I love it. I saw both of you, and not to objectify, but you both are snacks. Well, I saw half of your partner's face.
You. That's all Sam needed. Okay. She was like,
yes,
what?
Sammy. I love her. Anyhow. Oh, damn. I'm like blanking on the question now because I was being so silly.
the question is, are you doing any educating in your relationships?
Yeah, but in relationships that are reciprocal. And again, that doesn't necessarily have to mean any kind of specific relationship. I'm talking about relationships generally. So for example, don't ask me things you could have Googled.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are just basic things that you can do. And so there's of course patience. Again, I am a Taurus, but I'm a Taurus that's really close to Aries. So I have a sliver of patience. So there's patience because we're all growing, right? I'm sure that, you know, 10 years from now, I'm going to listen to this podcast and be like, oh, you know, I have completely different language for that now. And I'm saying that because I'm thinking about the quote that you read. I wrote that at such a different time and space. And so I can hear things that have remained the same, and I can hear things that have kind of changed. And so I'm willing to collaborate with you and your self-education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not willing to educate you.
That is such a great way to phrase it.
Yes. Because that takes the onus of the labor off of you. It's
yes.
Like, you must want to learn,
exactly.
And I can provide the materials and the resources I've gathered along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not about to sit here and create a syllabus for your ass.
No.
No, mm-mm. Absolutely not. I don't have an enough. No, please. And again, I don't have enough spoons for that. I'm just trying to get to Walgreens so I can get my icy hot patches. Like, man, don't nobody have time to be giving you all of these different tools and things. And so, yeah, there's room for a lot of different things. But yes, you have to come to the conversation willing to have the conversation.
And what would you say are the essentials that potential bays and partners need to date with someone with a chronic illness?
You know, it's going to be different for each person, because I know the matrix of my chronic illnesses. I know the matrix of my disabilities, but I'm still learning about other people in the community. So I have to keep that same energy in the community, right? And learn and ask questions sometimes, but also just kind of hold space for people and recognize them and ask them, how can I support you? Listening and being able to help, those are the real skills. I don't care about you can use this language and you know this, like, but are you willing to sit with the things when someone says, yeah, like, you using dumb is really, your ableist slip is showing. Are you willing to sit with that? You know what I mean? Are you willing to take that in? And so I think for me, all of those things become important, especially when building relationships, friendships, sexual partners, one night stands, monogamous, polyamorous, all those. I think those skills are the same through and through. In my journey, understanding Mia Mingus's term, access intimacy, has been a game changer. I can say that in my journey, the spoon theory, understanding that, has been a game changer. In my experience, I can say that the works of Gloria Anzaldúa and Audre Lorde and Aurora Levines Morales, the author that wrote Care Work, those are indispensable works for me. But doing my own study and doing my own reading is important. And when someone comes to me and is like, here's the reality, whether they tell me the name of their chronic illness or their disability or not, if someone is saying to me, sis, I can't come up your two flights of stairs, then that is just that. That's just that about that. Mm-hmm. And so I think these are people skills. I think these are.
Well, that was more of what I was trying to get at, not known resources, but people skills, like personality traits that people need to have, you know, and things that you mentioned or highlighted in your writing was flexibility, you know, knowing that we have to cancel something because a flare up came up, you know, and some people are very inflexible.
And you can always tell. But, you know, I think, again, like, understanding that, here's the thing, that is so cute that you wanted me to be here at this time to have coffee with you. That is so precious, and I love it, and I'm still gonna come and have coffee with you, but I'm going to be in my wheelchair, or I'm going to be a little bit late because I'm managing. I mean, you all have experienced a moment of excess intimacy today just before this podcast. I was like, I know I'm supposed to be on, but I'm trying to get it together over here. And so that's just the ability to be flexible and responsive to what people tell you, and the ability to not police people's bodies, period. Not try to decide if someone is like faking or not. Here comes the capitalism rant. I think capitalism teaches us, number one, not to listen to our own bodies. And so it's hard to listen to what other people are saying if you're not even listening to your own body. You've had snacks and coffee and 2 hours of sleep because you're trying to get your work done, right? But you're not listening to your body saying, hey, you need to rest, or hey, you need to, you know, whatever it is that you need to do.
Self-care, need to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're not taught to do that in this society, because we're taught, like, you're supposed to produce. You're supposed to produce, you're supposed to show up, you're supposed to have these results. Why? For capitalism's sake, so that we can have products. And so when we're all acculturated into that, it can be very difficult for people to understand that when I say I can't, there's a period at the end of that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
When I say, you know, I can and I need you not to wear a lot of fragrances. There's a period at the end of that sentence. And so I think sometimes capitalism can push us to police each other's bodies into the outcome that we want to see and we want to receive. And we have to unlearn that. I have to unlearn that. I'm unlearning that in my own body, in my own self. I sound like my auntie.
You sound like my auntie too. You we all have that auntie who's like, I'm not doing it with y'all.
I don't have that auntie, so I need it.
I've always said that if I ever wrote a memoir, it would be called Born an Auntie. Because
yes.
Totally that auntie that's like, your slip is showing, and also I'm the auntie that's pee popping on a handstand. So
my kind of
aspirations.
Yeah.
Aspirations. Ooh. Well, speaking of pee popping on a handstand,
huh? Let us move right on.
Yes,
let
yes,
us move right on to the nitty gritty then.
Gotta talk about the inner hoe, inner or outer.
Yes, I'm ready.
How are you navigating sex and sexual relationships as a chronically ill person?
I'm committed to always getting my life. And so I'm out here getting my life in very different ways because, number one, I understand that sexual moments do not just equal penetration.
Yes. Mm.
And as someone in a disabled body, that's a lesson that it helps to know, right? That sex does not equal penetration. There's sexual moments, right? And of course, like folks with like, who are doctors and all these things will like disagree with me, but
forget fuck them. Em.
Fuck them.
Like,
they sex life is boring.
Right.
Whatever. But I think there's an ability to see the sexual moment as ongoing, as evolving. And so there are things that you can do with an arm and a feather that really will just do everything that you need it to do.
Mm-hmm. Well.
There are things that you can do with breath and breathing that will help you get your life. There are things that you can do with pillows that will help you get your life. And so I think like the creativity that chronically ill folks and disabled folks can have in the bedroom, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. Some people that's not their thing, right? Some people, again, it's all about how you identify, how you want to live. But J. Taryn Perry enjoys sex, enjoys sensuality, enjoys being creative, and enjoys making the bedroom accessible. And so even if it's things like, okay, right now we're not going to do this manually, put me up on a swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll swing and... You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We'll do what we need to do. There's a lot of beauty and richness in that, and just understanding that like you can bring your whole self to the bedroom, in a safe way with sane and consensual kind of way.
I wanted to, so you had mentioned safe, sane, and consensual kink, and I know there's different, I guess, thought processes about that when it comes to kink regarding the safety aspect of it. Like some people feel different ways. Like there's risk aware consensual kink where it's like, this shit might not be safe, but we doing it anyway. So as a person, with chronic illnesses, is that like a thought process that you dip into, or is it like this? No, this specifically has to be safe. Like I'm protecting myself in all facets.
Well, you know what? I have that conversation more about the word sane.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
ooh,
you know,
yes.
For folks that don't know, you know, safe, sane, consensual is an adage that comes from the BDSM community. And so, yes, we can get to safe, but I think I want to start at sane.
Yeah, right?
Because
there.
I also, I also like have some real deep respect and love for the madness studies movements and for just allowing people the right to be who they are and allowing the people the right to be neurodiverse. And so I think that's another place where we need new language to communicate. We want to create kinky spaces that honor the particulars of people's bodies, minds, and things and the things that they've consented to. So that's the issue with doing shorthand of anything, really, is that words kind of get truncated and then you got to make new words and then you got to. And so this is what I'm trying to do in my writing is create new words or new frameworks or new thought patterns. I think, Akua, you said something about Black, disabled, queer, kink being all one word. And that was kind of just I was sitting there and I was writing the piece and I was like, how can I explain that it all goes together for me in these realms, right? Because I can't separate my Blackness and my womanness and my femness and my queerness and my disabledness and my kinkiness. And so how do we create new words to kind of put it all together? But yeah, I think when we get to safe, sane, and consensual, I think it's a framework that has worked to allow people to get the maximum enjoyment out of their situation. But I definitely think that it's time for a re-up of that language to include lots of different flavors of kink and lots of different people who are living in kink and doing kink and appreciating kink spaces. And we don't have to wait for anybody to do that for us. You know, we can create this language. We can create the language that we need at any point in time.
But more personally, what is your relationship with Black, queer, disabled kink?
I think it is something that is evolving. I think it recognizes all the possibilities of Blackness and queerness and disabled identity and kinkiness. And so I think of Black, queer, disabled kink when, and I'm thinking of someone in particular, when a friend and I share information about, like, how do we do this really fun thing that we saw and also not wake up with our joints being sore? Or how do we, like, where do you position your colostomy bag? And how do I want to do that in the rest of my costuming, right? If costuming and dressing up and all of that is a part of what you do. So I think that word for me just represents all the creative ways that we share information that helps us to get our life, that helps us to get more free in our sensual spaces, that helps us to get more free in our kinky spaces. And so, you know, and that can be as specific as my girl texting me like, yo, this back brace that I just got, like, I wore it during this, you know, sexy time and wow. Or even like there's some leather. There's this person that makes leather and it kind of functions as a brace. And so, you know, here's a number to that person. I think it's all of that, right? It's all of that. So it's something that is so hard to pin down as just one thing because I see it as a body of knowledge that's still evolving. It's the ways that we create kink community that centers Blackness, that centers queerness, that centers disabled bodies. And so the ways that you can do that are really as creative as you can be. And so I think that that's part of my relationship to it. And so it's even just those little things of knowing, like, I went to physical therapy and when I was at physical therapy, they put me in this machine. It's more like a manual machine of ropes and pulleys and different things. And they put some weights on my neck to try to help stretch my spinal cord. Of course, I'm laying there thinking like, ooh, can I take a picture of how these ropes are? Because number one, this is really helping my spine. And number two, the bondage of this is kind of, I'm kind of feeling this. I'm kind of enjoying this, right? So it's knowing that, right? It's being creative and understanding that, like, when we decide that we're going to make our bedroom accessible for different kind of bodies, whether or not we're chronically ill, whether or not we're disabled, it forces us to get creative. And that can lead to some awkward moments, and that can lead to some really sexy moments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, you know, personally, having a practice of orgasming is a part of my pain relief plan. Mm-hmm. So my pain relief plan is literally like, okay, go to physical therapy, take these medicines, take the vitamin D supplements, take the, you know, fish oil supplements, masturbate.
Bust some nuts. Yes.
Right there. You see what I'm saying?
Number four on the list.
It's right there. All of these things.
Take a bath. Yep. Masturbate.
You know?
Yep.
And vice versa, you know? Like, there are times where I'm telling you, nothing gets the kink out of my neck like that Hitachi wand. I'm telling you. And so, you know, because the wand really isn't playing with anybody.
Yes.
Sometimes it's like you have a wand for your sexy times, and then I have some wands that can do double duty. Yeah. If I need them. Yeah. To do that. and that's a part of my play. And so using tools to do sensual massage, let's do sensual massage, but maybe we do it with a wand. Or maybe we do at Walgreens, random bit of information. At Walgreens, there's like this, if you go in the section, like the healthcare section, the pain treatment section, usually they'll have, it looks like a wand,
mm-hmm.
But they call it a deep tissue massager.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it is literally my... My girl says that I'm in a secondary partnership with the which is kind of true in a lot of ways.
But there are some needs that not all one person can fit.
You see what I'm
sorry.
You see what I'm saying? And so, yeah, like sometimes that's a part of just like, ooh, you know, I need to put this on my back because that's just where I am. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's like, we're bringing that out during sexy time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, have you ever, if you've never gotten like the deep tissue massage on your back with the wand on your pussy or whatever parts you have, right? On your pussy, on your balls, yeah. Whatever you like stimulating.
Yeah.
Honey.
Yeah. As you started this conversation, I was like, I need me two wands now.
Like,
do you see what I'm saying?
Sounds lovely.
I'm trying to give the youth some keys.
It reminds me of this, there's this meme where somebody has like their hands cuffed and their the wand is out, and it's like, if you use this, your girl's gonna fall in love. Some patriarchal bullshit, but I'm like, if you add another wand for the kink in my back.
Come on.
Because of these handcuffs.
This is left side of that pink side. Like,
the way I will orgasm. Yeah.
Then I will retweet that. Because you're right. Might have to marry somebody. Like,
no.
Your whole body just.
Exactly.
Just twitching and twirling. Exactly. So again, like, and that's what I need. I'm not saying that's what other people need. But that's a part of what I need because I have a disability that affects my spine, that affects my back, and affects those different things. And so for me to fully integrate into a sensual moment, sometimes that helps. Sometimes spanking helps because it puts it's intentional use of impact to create, you know, a feeling. And sometimes that helps with, for me, my other pain. Because I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on breathing so I don't pass out while we're doing impact play.
The creativity. Like, I was reading your article, actually, and just hearing you talk about, like, impact play and how it helps with pain. I'm thinking of the ways that I do that in a non-kinky way. So it's like, if I add that into the bedroom, we got a good time here. Like, or, but when you I was see? Reading your you article see? And you had, it started out with what was like a scene and, you know, this is for, I'm asking, was this from like personal experience or were you just in your writing bag that day? Cause I read that and I was like, wait a minute.
Cool. It was getting a little steamy. Yeah.
No, that is from my real life. That is something that happened in my real life.
Have you considered writing erotica, Jade?
Yeah. I am.
You know what I have? That was my first. I have some things. Again, it's so funny because, like I said, I'm a Taurus sun, but I'm a Sagittarius moon, so I'm always going back and forth between like being very private and also just being like, fuck it, like this, that, the, you know. And so I have some pieces kind of written there, like in the tuck. And so I'm waiting for my body to catch up with what my spirit has already decided. Okay. Let's put it that way. And so, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
I'm starting to think.
if anything, I think I would put it on my Patreon.
Ah.
I think that's what I would do.
Well, if and when that happens, be in there.
Oh, that was a tangent for in the article, in that scene, you had mentioned having like a heating pad under the person's back, and I was just like, why don't I care for myself during sex?
Like, right, there's so many elements that could
just... why do I think that I have to suffer you to don't. Get off? Like, I could be comfortable. Why?
That's that patriarchal capitalism.
Oh,
come on, it's patriarchy and it's just ableism, right? Yes. Like, it's the clusterfuck of them both.
Yes.
And so, yes, I'm telling you. And if both of you have things that, again, there's so many different bodies. And so there's so many different ways to have sex. And so many different things you can do during sex. And so I really can only share from my vantage point and experience, because I think although other people in the community have shared their stories with me, I don't have their explicit consent to tell those stories. But I think for me, one thing that I found is just... If someone is laying on their back, so if you can picture, if someone's laying on their back and they have a heating pad under them, that helps. Taking Motrin, for me, taking Motrin before a sensual moment always helps. And I learned that before I was, you know, diagnosed with any kind of disability or anything like that, just from community knowledge. And there's also these icy hot, like, they're not patches, they're like bands, and you can put the band like on you, and it heats up. And so whether you're the partner that is a sub, or whether you're a dom, or whether you're a switch, you can put that on and then like strap up your harness and like do what you gotta do. And so it doesn't just have to be you laying on your back. It could be, you know, there are times where I've been like, I'm feeling like I'm ready. And so then we break out the icy hot patches and harness up and do what we got to do.
And I'm thinking of that creativity that you were speaking of before, and that even the use of that that icy hot can be dual, and that there's like play with like heat and cold and like certain types of stimuli, mm-hmm. that works for. And you're doing preventative work. You're like, my back don't hurt. But also here is this really hot sensation going on as well.
Akua, you see where I'm coming. You're linked with me in spirit. Now,
like, no, because now I'm thinking, like, as much as I joke about having to stretch before sex.
But actually, though.
But actually, I do have to stretch before sex. But it's like, why am I not?
I stretch before sex.
But why am I not also taking, like, why am I not taking an Aleve before? Because I know my hip gonna hurt. Like, why am I not caring for myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, there are times that I stretch before sex, and there are times when I tell my partner, you stretch me.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's go. I love how, like, everyday things, like Icy Hot, for example, has no sexual connotation, but now, like, when Jade is like in the grocery store or whatever, passing by the fucking ice hat, she like, this reminds me of last night.
We pick this up. Yeah. We running low.
when I'm in my mistress mode, I absolutely love just being like, no, it's your job to stretch me. Mm-hmm. If you want to fuck me, you can also stretch me.
Every interview we do on the show changes my life, and now that's a line that I got to incorporate. I'll cite you.
Go give it credit where credit is due.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. And there was also in that same article, and I feel like you may have hinted towards it, but it may also have been a different experience. In that article, you had mentioned kind of reframing the everyday things that you see. So you had like learned stretches and different holds and position from physical therapy that then you brought into the bedroom. And the question is, how often that happened? Like, are you in the grocery store like, this new bomb might do something?
Okay, so yes, but for a lot of different reasons. Some of it, yes, is for personal use, but there's another leg of my work that is focused on helping queer people of color and Black churched women unlearn sexual and sensual repression. And so I've found that sometimes once I start off with something that they would view as explicit, sometimes there's a visceral kind of reaction. And so how do we build in our sensual practice so that our sexual practice doesn't feel like, okay, now I gotta turn it on, now I gotta turn it off. And so I think it's something that I've learned to do in my personal life, but then also in my more external life. Because it's, again, like, to me, kink is all about being creative. And so creative people are going to be creative no matter where they are, no matter what they're doing. And I think the core is that is being willing to advocate for what your body needs in those moments. And you can do that in a way that's sexy to you. Some days I feel like I want to be a little bit bratty. And so I'm like, you know, babe, can you, you know, some days I like that. Some days I want to be more dominant. So I'm like, you know, tie me up, do these things. Some days I want to switch, so, you know, and so that's the thing. It's all about being creative and being responsive. And it actually helps me, and again, I can't speak to everyone, but it helps me think about my spoons even in a sexual moment. Who do I want to be in that moment? How much energy do I want to expend in that moment? So it's all a part. What are the different sensual sites of my body? For me, my neck is particularly sensitive. And so how do we honor that for its own kind of sexual and sensual moment? So yes, I think of, and I know it's such a Taurus thing to say because we're ruled by Venus and we, but I really do think that like sensual moments are everywhere. Now, whether you want to turn them into sexual moments when you get home, that's your creativity.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I like you like it. I love it. As you were, you were talking about learning to not switch it off or advocating for what you need, and still making it sexy. I was like, from now on, I'm telling niggas I'm popping this a leave so I could blow his back out. Like, and these, I'm just like thinking of all the ways I could communicate these things. Just, you need to start giving lessons, coaches, workshops.
I do.
Know I was about to say, go right on to the website. She's gonna drop it for us.
Yes, I do. I really am about, especially for Black, queer, disabled folks, and people of color in general. Mm-hmm. And marginalized groups in general, like it's an important practice to advocate for yourself in the bedroom and in a way that makes you feel empowered. Because that's, in my mind, that's a sacred space. And I don't mean that in like any kind of like faith tradition or religious tradition. I'm just saying it's a sacred space because it's your space. And so you get to decide what goes on in your space. You have that right to get to decide what goes on in your space. And in my space, we got exercise balls and foam rollers and massage tools and
good time.
Icy hot patches and So, yeah.
Foam rollers are already an orgasmic experience. So the link is like there. It's logical. It's right there.
Yeah, we're missing it. And yet we're missing it because of ableism.
Well, right, exactly. Because you think, okay, my body needs to, quote, perform in this certain way. In this certain way that was made up by non-disabled people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yesterday I was fucking sorry. And I was on my knees and I was just like, nah, my knees hurt.
Yes.
And I just turned to him. I was like, yo, my knees hurt. And he was like, you know what? Mine's were too. And I wasn't gonna say anything.
Yes. See? No.
Just doing it for no fucking reason. We
have to just start unpacking our ableism in all areas of our life. All of it.
Yeah, really. Seriously. Like, it's so true. And I'm so glad that you advocated for yourself.
Yeah. Thank you, Jade.
I love it. Or you know, sometimes it's like that hurts, but also like keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But just making it known.
On where mm-hmm. you are. Yeah.
You're very right about that. That's so true. I'm happy.
I'm done. This is the end for me. I am satisfied.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you can save you. Sometimes I will save my spoons because I know that I want to be kickball changing mm-hmm. across my bedroom. And so,
but today's gonna be a quiet day because exactly. tonight
I'm trying to reserve it.
You see what I'm saying? I'm on vocal rest. I am resting every part of my body. I am taking baths in Epsom salt and roses.
Yes, Epsom salt. Yes.
Oil.
Yes.
You know,
preparing
getting my disabled goddess energy up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a game. It's not a game in our household.
All right. I love it. Any takeaways, final words
that you haven't already gave?
Oh, yeah, you know. How right. you know, how can we wrap this up in a bow? Because
can we even? yeah, no. I think again, like I hope that if anything, this podcast allows people to see how ableism impacts life in general, yes, but also like the things that we do in the bedroom. And I just want people to know that there's another way that you can build accessibility into your kinky times, and that it is your right to do so. And so I think that's what I want people to know. Other than that, if folks are looking for where to find me, you can find me on jadetperry.com. That is where I post, you know, most of it is free content and just different kind of musings. Or patreon.com/jadetperry. That is where I post more of my like 18 over.
Okay.
Yeah. The naughty stuff.
That's where it is. That erotica stuff we were talking about. That's where it is.
That's where it's going to be.
That black, queer, disabled erotica. We're
yes.
there.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So I know where I'm going.
Of, you know, yeah. So my a nice part of my sensual photo shoots and different things like that are on the Patreon platform. And I'll also send you the, you know, Facebook and all those kind of like social media handles so that folks can follow me
cool.
in those ways too.
Dope. And we will put that in the description of this episode. Jade, it's been a lovely afternoon.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, same. Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Whew.
That was a bomb ass episode.
Learn some things, Samantha.
Bomb ass episode. Bomb ass series. Bomb ass year.
Yes, we've been doing good things for the first quarter of 2019.
Which is why we're taking off in July.
No, Samantha, I need a break. I don't know. Attending sex trivia took something out of me. I was like, oh, I can't do all of this no more. I don't got it.
I'm ready to pussy pop on a handstand for all of July.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
And we may not be podcasting, but I'm sure y'all going to see us out in these streets.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be doing something. How do we end the show, Samantha?
We let everyone know where they can follow us.
Okay. If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Innerhoe Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Innerhoe Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You go to InnerhoeUprising.com to pay a hoe and check out some merch.
Mm-hmm. And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego on Instagram for travel and food photos.
And it's Akua, hey Akua girl, on Instagram and Twitter. It might change to the bald one. I like that. I really like that.
Wait, I love that actually. The bald one. I hope nobody took that. Okay, guys, we'll see you next episode.
Bye.